session number 9552, reel 12.
Mr. Basil Farrow, Reel 12. I wonder if you could tell me if you ever had any experience of gas attacks, either shell or clouds, during your time at Kanwha?
No. I have no recollection of, certainly, of the use of gas from cylinders or from the other side. No, not during the period we were holding. And with regard to shells, I don't think either we... Because a shell... In any event, when it explodes, it's got a smell, lidite and all that kind of thing. But I don't remember during the period we were holding of them using gas shells on us.
What about when you were in reserve at Bomfrey Farm?
Oh, yes. Well, as I might have said, I forgot whether it's 4 or 5 days in the front line, then 5 days in reserve. Well, the reserve was one company in Bomfrey Farm. It was invariably B Company, my company. And the other three companies were in an adjoining wood in tents. And now, Bomfrey Farm, at that time, the civilian owner, the farmer, and his wife were there. I don't remember whether any children, but they were actually living in the building. Now, this was at the beginning. This was January 1915.
16.
16, I beg your pardon. 16, yes. And... we were billeted in there in the cowshed. That is a big building. There's the central entrance and on stalls to the right and stalls to the left. Of course, there were no cows there when we were billeted there. Whether they had any or not, I don't know. I never saw any. Anyhow, it was safe. When I say safe, we considered it safe in as much as, although it was well within shelling distance, it had not received, even up to that date, January, it had not received a single shell. And although in reserve, when the battalion was in reserve, it was still forbidden to undress entirely, chaps ignore the order there. They thought they were pretty safe. There'd been nothing had fallen. In fact, there were even strange rumours as to why it hadn't been, it belonged to the German officer, or they used it as a landmark. But anyhow, they could have used it as a landmark, even if they'd have shattered it. But up till then, a shell hadn't fallen. Now, it happened to be the Kaiser's birthday. I've forgotten what date. It's towards the end of January, the Kaiser's birthday. And I suppose to celebrate the occasion, our artillery gave them a real pasting. Poor Kaiser's, Soldaten, really got it. And nothing came back in reply. At least we in reserve didn't know. We didn't get anything. Maybe our relieving regiment, that's the Liverpool Pals, perhaps they were getting it in the front line, but we weren't. The day passed, and night as usual, we all retired for the night, and bang, right in the middle of the night, half a dozen shells came crashing down on the farm. Well, as they say in French, it was a sauve qui peut. That is, everybody out. Because on the other side of the road, as I've said, Bomfrey Farm was on the road leading down to Bray, there were a couple of dugouts. Dashed to the dugouts. Whether there were any casualties, I've forgotten. I don't think there was in the first shelling. There weren't in B Company in here. Well, it was B Company. It was only B Company concerned. We got into a dugout. And then, as I say, shells, they smell, you smell the lidite, and it must have been, whether they were gas shells or not, but somebody said there's gas shells, gas. So I felt for my gas with the gas mask, and I'd left it in the farm. Oh my God, it's either a question of being gassed or... So I took a chance, dashed across the road into the middle road, and door, the door, the big arch doors in the middle of the wall, and I turned left to where my, just as I turned left, two, if not three, shells come crashing through the roof on the right-hand side. Absolutely demolished the right. I flattened myself down. I'd have turned right, I'd have been obliterated. Got my gas mask and flew back to the dugout. Those are things, as I say, the soldier in the battle area knows perfectly well any moment can be his last. And so it doesn't remain... It's accepted by him. He just hopes it'll be clean, that's all. But those are the only those things that remain in the memory, that, a thing like that.
So that was your only experience. That may or may not have been gas. That was your only experience of gas prior to the actual offensive.
Yes.
Were people worried about gas at all?
I don't think so. Right at the beginning, those that really experienced it might have been. But when it was first used in April 1915 up at Ypres, there, and when it caused panic a bit, that first experience might have. But then after, we were issued with varying types of gas masks, varying types. We just accepted it as part of the ordinary thing. I don't think I had any special fear, because I'd not seen the horror of that it produces of fellas choking and things like that, as described. I think it's in one of Sassoon's, if you could, in some smothering dream, you two could pace behind the wagon that would be flung him in. Have you read that one? It's terrible. No, I'd not experienced that. But one of the fears, because we didn't fear it at Carnoir, but in various times over there in the area, one of my greatest fears was mines, not mines that you'd kick, well, I mean mining underneath, and flamethrowers. Those were my fears, because they'd started using, and I've forgotten what date, they'd started using flamethrowers. Those were my fears. But otherwise, you had to be a fatalist. I mean, God, if you thought you were going to be... You'd go daft if you started thinking of...
Talking of people going daft, how did, under the stress of the daily routine, even in the Carnoir, even in a quiet sector, it was still a stress, how did people stand in your company and the battalion stand up to the stress?
Quite normally in the ordinary period.
So there was no cases of shell shock or...
I have no recollection of there being. Not during the period of holding. I've come across it later.
What about military discipline? Were there any problems with people breaking various laws or decrees?
No, we were fairly... Although it was a regular battalion, composed not only of Yorkshiremen, but the depot being at Richmond, right in the north, there's quite a lot of Durhamites and miners. Rough chaps, but very nice chaps.
Morale was good?
The morale was good, as far as my experience goes, at all time.
How did, in the front line, what were relationships like between the ranks? Firstly, between the other ranks, so to speak, the ordinary privates. How well did they get on in the front line? What was the nature of the relationship between each other?
Quite well. I mean, quite normal. Well, you had your own, some of their own particular pals stick together, but the relationship, there was I don't remember any serious, any rows, and I don't remember any fights, anything like that.
Would everybody have special friends that they ate?
Yes, I think so. We, of course, formed the four stretch bearers, a kind of a companionship, friendship, if you like. But we were always together. But in the line itself, you'd probably have a couple of a form of friendship, and somebody you possibly the idea being somebody you could rely upon in to keep your moral, help you to go through the stress and strain of it.
So these
if you're alone, it's hard. I mean, even living alone here, when that's stress, I mean, you get demoralised. But alone in the front line trench, if you haven't a friend, you possibly would go off the deep end. So for friend, the comradeship, and depend upon each other particularly.
What about how did you get on with your NCOs, corporals, sergeants, etc.?
Well, in B Company, we got on very well. As far as my recollection, I don't remember any any nasty NCO. All seemed, from my recollection, they were all decent chaps.
Were they very important in the day-to-day running of events, or would you say it was the officers that were most important in the day-to-day scheme of events?
NCOs, the sergeant. The sergeant is the man in the battalion. Well, the battalion sergeant major, but first, but then is NCOs. The officers, I should imagine, especially as there were very often renewal of officers, young officers, inexperienced, very young, so they had to rely, and they did rely a great deal on mature men, the NCOs. Of course, what happened, the old NCOs eventually were killed, and then some were withdrawn because they thought they would lose them for training, and new NCOs, but nevertheless, to be an NCO, you were closer to the men, the officers, and you lived the life of the men, whereas the officers didn't. They were in the front line, but they didn't live the life of the men. They could be killed, of course. But theirs was a comfortable life compared with the men's. They had a servant. Of course, the ordinary, junior officers would share what they call an orderly. Officer servant, orderly. Whereas the higher ranks of captain and major, they'd have their individual ones.
Would they have superior dugouts in the front line, if there were any?
I wouldn't like to say, because I don't remember.
What about their food? Would they get different food or just better food?
Well, they were better off because they supplies. In those days, you could get supplies from England, and officers with money could get quite a lot of stuff sent out, which we didn't, of course. We had to rely on the Salvation Army canteens when we were out for a little extra. I think it's called the Red Shield, I'm not sure. But NAFI didn't exist in those days, but they had the Salvation Army and Christian organisations and things like that. But the officer, of course, he had his mess out of the line, mess. And they had better food than whether they I couldn't say that they were entitled. Their entitlement to army rations was greater than ours. I couldn't say that. I have no idea. But they were in a better position. Lots of them had lots of stuff sent out from England by these firms who supplied, particularly.
How did you get on with your officers then? What did you think of them?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, personally, with very little, very little to do with the officers. Little contact, that's the word I'm seeking. Very little contact with the officers.
What did you see their role as being then in the front line? What was their job?
Well, their job was in charge of the men, the leader, the men. Although the sergeant might be the more experienced, the men had to trust the officer.
I wondered how you would trust someone that you had very little to do with, because you said you had very little to do with them.
I don't know how officers felt, really. I mean, I'm talking blind, but I should imagine that they, being an officer, they had to show a certain put on a show that they didn't feel. I mean, it wouldn't do for an officer to show cowardice or anything like that. And he might feel same as a soldier. He was a human being, but he had to, I should imagine his code would.
Did you respect your officers then, though, even though you didn't see much of them?
I mean, we took it for granted. I was a regular soldier, and any regular soldier, they were worlds apart. They were officers and we were men. It was like East and West, and never the twain shall meet sort of business. In peacetime, and I've forgotten whether in wartime, you would never, a soldier could never approach an officer and speak to him. It'd have to be through an NCO.
Would that relax in the trenches?
I think so. I can't say with certainty. It would depend upon the regiment, I should imagine. But true greater familiarity would not be encouraged. by the higher-ups, they'd have to keep their distance. They would have to do.
Besides Sparks, your friend, the sniper, are there any other individuals, either officers or other ranks, that spring to mind from this period, you know, that you can remember about things about?
No. And I can't remember many names. I can't remember any names, strange to say.
What about... What was your, as a frontline soldier, albeit a stretcher bearer, what was your attitude to other back area troops, troops that never came to the front line, including your old RAMC, the Army Service Corps, military police, that sort of people? What was your attitude as a frontline soldier to them at that time?
Well, nothing particular except to sort of think they were lucky blighters, that's all, to me. And you know, with no envy or aggro against them, just lucky blighters.
Did you ever wish you'd stayed with the RAMC?
I can't say that. I truthfully say that I can't remember ever having thought that. Now, I'd regret it now, because I mean I've got more sense. But then I don't remember regretting having left the RAMC. No. I'm speaking from, as far as I can remember, I never any regrets. I realised that, I don't say I'd realised I'd done a foolish thing, but I'd realised that I'd put myself in greater danger than I was before. But I was a young lad and accepted that.
Having dealt with sort of frontline life, I wonder if you could just explain, you've touched on it, about the way that your periods in the line and support and in reserve Bromfrey Farm and at Bray, how it was exactly organised and how long you spent in each.
Well, I'd forgotten truthfully whether it was 4 or 5 days in the front line, a similar number of days in reserve, because
where was that at, in reserve?
In reserve would be at Bromfrey Farm, one company, and three companies in the wood. Then the Liverpool Pals, the Liverpool Regiment, I think it was the 19th Liverpool, it was the Pals Battalion. They would be in for the 5 days, and alternately like that. And I don't know how often, not whether it was regular or not, I've really forgotten, we would find ourselves back in Bray for a short period. When I say a short period, a few days, probably to have a real clean up and maybe a bath. And I think I remember in Bray, was it? We'd sometimes go and knock at a civilian's door, and I think, I don't know how that came about, but I did go into, and paid, of course, an egg and chips. They used to make egg and chips for us, the civilians.
Come to when you were in Bray, that's sort of right out of the line. When you were at Bromfrey Farm, if you could look at that, when you were in reserve.
Yes.
How did that differ from being in the front line? Or how was it the same, if you want? What was it like in reserve?
I don't know. Forgotten, really. It's so long ago. I've forgotten whether we're drilled or whether we do any fatigues. What fatigues we could do, I don't know. There was a period when we were further back, when we were put on real fatigues. I even remember, I think we might have been at some place near Corby, further back, even having been taken to work in quarries, in stone quarries. And we'd be on fatigues or drill or something like that. It is a time, you know, it is a time ago to remember precisely.
When you were in rest, that would be at Bray.
Yes.
That's right out of the line. Would you go back to normal, so to speak? Would you have a reassertion of spit and polish? Would you start getting that again?
Well, there was no question of polishing your buttons, but that would be a period when we could have a proper clean-up, because your stuff would be in a bit of a mess. And we could have clean your equipment and, as much as possible, brush off the coated clay that was on your clothes and all that, and clean your rifle and have a proper clean-up.
Would you be inspected to make sure you'd done that, or would it just be something
you could be? You could be, yes. and probably you might even the officer would inspect your feet to see that they're in good order. I've never had my feet inspected, I don't remember, but that could happen.
What about your accommodation and food, you know, your conditions of service at Bray? What would that be like? Where would you be staying at Bray?
Well, we'd be billeted in farms, in farm outbuildings. The officers would be billeted in houses on the civilians, you know. But the men would be billeted in barns and things like that. Never on civilians.
That was comfortable, was it?
Well, it was like a barn with straw and an ordinary farm barn with straw to lay on.
What about the food? How would that... Oh, you mentioned you had
meals. We'd have more hot meals out of the line than we had when we were in. For instance, a midday meal would be a warm meal.
What duties, while you were at Bray in rest, what duties would you have to do as a stretcher bearer? Would you be involved?
No. From my recollection, I think we were rather privileged. I think we were excused all these fatigues. I don't remember doing it. Except on one occasion, when we were further back than Bray, we were working in a quarry. There, I do remember that, but normally I don't remember...
What were you doing in the quarry? Can you remember the work you did there?
With our entrenching tool, digging away at it. I think it is something to do, really, to occupy us. And we weren't doing anything specific, but I do remember us being in this quarry, a stone quarry. For no particular reason except to tire us out and pass the day, I should imagine.
What about rest and recreations and things? What would you do when you were back at?
Well, when in a rear area where there are other troops, sometimes or even not in the regiment in intercompany, a game of football. Football would be played sports in general. It happened once or twice. I remember playing football.
Would you play yourself?
Yes, I remember playing. I remember particularly playing because we'd had a... Well, what reminds me of that particular time, we'd had a rum ration in the morning. Why we'd had a rum ration out of the line, I don't know. But we'd had one, and playing, I found that when I was running, it sort of took my breath away. It must have affected me. I shouldn't have. That obviously rum is not the thing to drink before a game of football. That's why I remember playing football, because of that occasion.
How about gambling or cards, games like that? Would you carry on with them?
Well, one played cards a lot, yes.
Cards seems to have been very popular.
Yes.
Yes,
one played cards a lot. And... not so much in the front line, but the back areas, they used to have what they call housey-housey. Now it's called bingo. In the army, it's called housey-housey. It's the same game. And also crown and anchor, although that was not allowed, really, because it was a real gambling game.
Did you play crown and anchor?
On one occasion, it was when I was going on leave. Oh, that's one thing I missed out. When I arrived at the Yorks, we were inspected by the general just after I'd arrived. Before we went in the line, before we went in at Kanwa.
While you were at Wassey?
Yes, it must have been there. We were inspected by the brigadier, I think it was the brigadier. And he stopped in front of me and... the words are true. He said, how long have you been out? I said, since August 1914, sir. He looked at me. And then I said something for which I bit my tongue after, because I thought he was going to ask me, this is only in my mind, I thought he was going to ask me how old I was. And I left all the truth. I could have gone to the order room and told them, but that would be... But I'd have been asked... I'd have told the truth, and then of course. But I didn't give him time. I said, since 1914, sir, and I haven't had any leave yet. Well, of course, leave started in 14, December 14. He just turned, spoke to commanding officer of the battalion, was Colonel Young, and said a couple of words and passed on. I was called to the order room after. I was on the next batch of leave. Now, I know it was then because... Now, it's about Crown Nanka, that's why I'm speaking of this. I went on leave on New Year's Eve. I left the battalion. I found I was... They'd verified from my records. You see, I'd moved from... As you've seen through my history so far, I've been moving about from different units and never got a leave. And that was well on into... And they saw that I hadn't leave. Anyhow, on the 30th of January, off I went to Le Havre. And just before we got into Le Havre, the train stopped. It was midnight. All the engines were hooting, the ships were hooting, the old year out, the new year in. And we were stuck there for ten minutes, or longer, must have been longer, when we got into the dock. The leave boat had left, because it was a question of tide, and what will you, and submarines, I don't know, but the leave boat had left, and we were... And then, of course, we were raised our voices. And the camp common came along and said, quietened it, and said, you're quite all right, your leave will be extended, 24 hours, which it was. But we had to wait till the next day. So we were taken up to the camp, the base camp, for food to pass the day. And, of course, the camp wallers, base wallers, brought out, they knew we were all going on leave and we'd got our leave money. They brought out the Crown and Anchors. And they took the... lots of fellas went home without any money. I myself got down to... I think I left... Because when you're in the line, you're not paid out, and your money is accumulating, you see. Or you'd be paid out once a month, and then only 5 francs. So if I remember rightly, I'd left the battalion with them £6 or £7, which is a lot of money in those days. On the Crown and Anchor, I'd got £3 left. I stopped. I had the sense to stop. I lost £4. That was the only time I paid Crown and Anchor. but that's what brought... having the leaves, and then this gentleman saying to me, how long have you been out? He must have seen that I was a young chap.
Did you resent losing that money at Crown and Anchor? Did you realise you were being taken?
No, I just thought myself a damn fool. I mean, stop. Otherwise I'll have no money left.
It was recognised as a real gambling game.
Oh, yes, and it was forbidden too by the military authorities.
But you didn't resent the individual who took your money particularly?
we didn't know he was cheating. I didn't. I mean, thought it was the look of the game, you know. Pete, and it was just the look. They've got the better chances. They've got the better chances. That's why they always win. I mean, you could have a stroke of luck. Same as an horse racing, but they've got the better chances. The bookie always wins, the bookie, in other words. I won't say they were cheating, I can't see how they can cheat on that.